Hello and welcome back to Camp Hot Pod. We are your head counselors. I'm Erin, daughter of Athena.
And I'm Manasa, daughter of Persephone. This week we're discussing chapters 45 through 51, the last and final parts of The Sun and the Star.
Another book down. Another book we did.
Before we get into this book, I would like to give this book the kudos of being the book that we did after having such a rigid and stressful time. The PJA show was a lot of fun, but it was a lot of structure trying to get things out before the show came. We wanted to be on top of things. We held ourselves to a much higher standard than we would for a podcast to make $0. So this being the next book we did, I think was perfect in a lot of ways because we got to be a little bit lazy with it. We enjoyed it. We didn't enjoy it. There was a lot of things that we got to be a little cuckoo about it. So
exactly. I do appreciate that. We get to go back to our roots, which is losing our mind over plot points. Yeah. Definitely. It's kind of funny to see because we got so many people listening to the show episodes because a lot of people, in the same way, a lot of people have listened to our Percy Jackson episodes and The Lightning Thief and everything, but not to Trials of Apollo. A decent amount of people have listened to Heroes of Olympus, and we're kind of back to our Trials of Apollo numbers because not as many people have read that series or this book, which you have to read that series to read this book. Or at least, otherwise, you're going to be like, why is Jason dead suddenly?
Suddenly.
What happened in that book that we missed? So I feel like we're back to the OG listeners slash the people who will eventually catch up to this that maybe found us from the show and will send us emails months after we have recorded it. And I don't remember saying the things that they cite, but I appreciate it.
On that note, this last chunk of chapters was bananas. it felt a little bit like when you read a conclusion in a middle school grade essay and they just started hitting the point with a hammer. It's in conclusion, people can be gay. It's okay. People are multifaceted. Yeah. And
it was pretty on the nose, which I understand is needed sometimes in middle grade, but I would also argue that it's not. There are a lot of books that I read as a kid with very complicated themes that were not on the nose. And while I didn't quite I didn't read a book and articulate this is about the horrors of war, but I feel like I internalized that. And as an adult, look back and I'm that's where my morality comes from. Am I thinking about Animorphs? Yes, I am.
I thought you were thinking about Gregor the Overlander. Also the same.
I was literally also thinking those two books, I feel shaped my whole view on politics.
Well, I also have a strong feeling of when I was a kid, and I see it as an adult too, when you interact with children, they know when they're being kind of disrespected because they value when it people treat them like equals or like they are smart rather than treating them like they're dumb and they need to be taught a lesson. That's just not fun to read. Mm-hmm. I'm learning about lessons in school. Everyone around me is telling me how I should live my life and what to do. I love an author that's a peer who treats me with respect, which is why I love the original PJO series so much, because everything with the nuance was so well done. And it was it treated me like an equal. And again, I am now in my late 20s. This book is not my equal, but I put myself in a shoe of someone who is a bit younger. And I feel like it's missing it a little bit by being a little bit too preachy, a little bit too presumptuous that I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. That you don't have the lived experience or expertise or knowledge, that even if kids don't have the lived experience per se, I think they can form their own opinions and things, which isn't to say I love the message at the heart of this book is really great, and it feels so on the nose that it makes me feel like we said I'm too old for this book.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That being said, the summary of what we're going to talk about is Nick. Who's Nick? I don't know.
It's Nick.
Oh, God.
Nick Miller.
The summary of what we're going to be talking about in this episode is Nico, Will, and Bob are going to use the power of friendship to defeat Nick.
Hell yeah.
And escape Tartarus. They're also going to start a family feud on their way out. Some kids are about to go no contact with their mom.
Yeah. You know, power of friendship, this kind of brings us back to the Care Bears. The way they defeat Nyx is kind of like a Care Bear stare. Because it's like sending love at her, you know?
Yeah, the glow is friendship, right? Or love?
Yeah, there's a friendship bear. I'm sure Sam will interrupt to correct me.
Is it yellow? I've seen the yellow one, and it's the sun.
Sunshine bear.
Sunshine
bear.
It's like something like you call, like, seems derogatory somehow. I don't know. Oh, I think it's just more like, oh, you stick that where the sun don't shine, and this is sunshine. Sorry. What? I'm losing it a little bit.
Melissa's losing it. It's okay.
I did lose it at the Cocoa Puffs. I thought that was the dumbest shit I've ever read.
I love the Cocoa Puffs.
I like the idea of them. Just I don't like name. The name is so cool. Like, cacao demons is too hard to say, but Cocoa Puffs is fine.
Well, because it's like, I don't know how you say it, but it's like cacao demons, maybe because it sounds inappropriate. And Nico was like, I can't say that. So he changed it to Cocoa Puffs, or maybe it's Coca Demons. I don't know.
I think it's like I don't know.
Coca, I think, demon. It's the demon part of it. Just doesn't feel affectionate. Them demons. He's like, I'm accepting you, so you're now Puffs. Anyways, all right. So I have chapters 45 through 47. I feel like this is gonna be a time. Monisa texted me before recording and was like, I'm really sleep deprived and just had your first week at a new job, so you're like, I'm gonna be insane. And I was like, oh good, I'm so glad. Looking forward to it.
The kind of energy you bring to the function is just rancid.
To the function. Yeah, that's good. I think that's a good energy, actually. We need that at every function. There needs to be your, like, Nick's. The darkness. Because she's, like, bad energy, and they're like, leave, you know?
Yeah. She's no job. She's nothing better to do.
You're like, I'm not Nick's. I have a job.
I have a job.
Okay. Chapters 45 through 47. We got this. Nico realizes that he has more power than he thought in this situation. The power of friendship, as we mentioned. He's like, the Kako demons are my children. They're not just like Nyx's creation. They're mine. I'm the father that stepped up. So he commands them to stop.
Oh, I love the idea of like, wow. Not full custody, you know, shared custody. This is like,
yeah,
we are parents. I'm not a babysitter. I am stepping up. I'm raising these children. Yeah. No, not shared custody. Yeah. He takes full custody. He takes Nick's to family court. Takes his babies.
He's like, I'm going to have. Yeah, he's like, let's do a paternity test right now. These are my children. And they listen to him. He uses his daddy voice. They're like, oh. They listen to Nico instead of Nyx, who is really mad about this turn of events. The Kako demons obey Nico, and it makes Nico think of the prophecy, which he decides to then recite aloud, which I thought Nyx had a funny comment. Nyx was like, stop reading poetry to me. And I was like, relatable right now.
Same.
But he says, go forth and find the one who calls out your name, who suffers and despairs for refusing to remain. There, leave something of equal value behind, or your body and soul no one will ever find. And he's like, he spent this whole time worrying that the equal value he'd have to leave behind was Bob or Will. And he's like, no, it's my trauma, actually. I'm going to leave these Kako demons behind. He was like, they're my children, and I'm going to abandon them.
It's my choice to abandon them.
Just like a father. father would. He's like following into Hades's footsteps. Hades actually is not the worst of the godly parents.
Crazy enough. I had like a big thing about this because he does this whole thing. He realizes it's not Will or Bob he has to leave behind, but his demons, his trauma, and then he doesn't. They come with him. He gets some new pets.
I think it's different. Well, okay, we'll get to that. You're a little ahead of the plot right now, but I feel like it is different. Okay. So anyway, Nyx is mad that the demons aren't listening to her anymore. She orders her other children to attack Nico, like Nemesis and Hypnos, but the other children are like, no, we don't want to. And Nemesis is like, she's like, aren't you the goddess of revenge? And Nemesis is like, I'm actually about balance too, Mom. You don't understand me.
It's not just a phase.
Yeah, literally. They hold her down and try to buy Nico and his friends some time. And Nico takes the time to talk to his Coco demons. And he rechristens them his Coco Puffs here because he just doesn't like saying the word Coco demon. A name that I thought made them a lot cuter. You thought made you hate them. They're just like little cereal.
Don't pups. Put a poll. Every time you put a poll on Instagram, everyone disagrees with me. They hate my opinions and my ideas.
Well, you know what? Van Gogh was hated during his time.
Oh, you're right. I'm just an artist. I just have to die and people will appreciate me.
You're an artist. Your opinions are art. Insulting the Coco Puffs is art.
Reading children's books and shitting on them is my art.
Yeah. It's an art. Or loving them. You know, you can go either way.
That's true. That is true.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, Nico tells his Coco Puffs that he's tired of fighting his own demons, so he sets them free. And then he touches each one and feels the emotion that they carry, the memories, and tells them they're free. They don't have to come with him. And this, again, I was like, someone's been to therapy, and I don't think it's Rick. I think it's Mark. I don't think Rick goes to therapy.
It's so funny.
I was like, the way that you're like, have to acknowledge the emotion that you feel and then be like, this is just a passing thing. This isn't who I am. I can set this free. Like, wow. Someone has done some family systems work there. So then Nico, Bob, Will, and Small Bob make a run for it after telling the Coco demons like they're free to do whatever they want with their lives. And Nyx is struggling against her own children. Then Bob grabs all of them and yeets himself off a cliff into the river of pain. Mm-hmm. And then like he's clearly in pain, but he, I think, can handle it a little better than them since he is a Titan. And when they crawl onto the bank, Bob is elated to finally be free. He's like whooping and jumping around. But then Nemesis appears and tells them that they need to get out of there fast because Nyx has escaped their how they were trying to hold her, and she's going to capture them. Gorgeira's boat then shows up. That boat is really the MVP of this book. It just keeps showing up. And they hop in, but then Nyx slams down on the riverbank across from them and turns into an enraged black hole, which, again, she has so much potential to be cool.
I know.
She can turn into a black hole. They realize, however, that this part, I lost my mind a little bit. I won't lie. And I don't remember thinking this the first time I read it, but I think analysis can either, like, make things better or worse. In this case, it made me more confused. So they realize as they're on the River of Pain that they don't hear the voices anymore of people like crying out and calling to them. And Bob says this is because it only calls out to you if you let it. And I was like, I don't get it. That has never been, I feel like it's the River of Pain. It's going to work on any mortal.
Yeah.
It's not going to just like not work on you because you like had a therapeutic moment, you accepted yourself, it's suddenly like, oh, hands off.
My mind is too strong to be broken by the River of Pain.
I guess, and I was also like, I feel like, yeah, sure, Nico kind of went through that emotional journey, but Will didn't. Like, I don't think Will's had this, like, full emotion, same level of, like, accepting his trauma, etc. But Will can't hear it anymore either, apparently. So I found that confusing personally. Maybe someone will be able to better explain it.
Yeah.
Felt like he was retconning how the River of Pain works, and I found that weird.
It kind of feels like something someone who's like emotionally blackmailing you, or like emotionally like not abusing you, but you know, like something a parent would say when they don't understand their teenage child, of like, if you're upset, just don't let it upset you anymore. Like, you just have to rise above it. Like, you just have to stop letting it upset you. Like, stop letting the river of pain cause you harm. Just be mentally stronger.
Yeah. But apparently that's how it works, which again, okay. I was like, I feel like just accepting your demons doesn't lead to you being healed. But I don't think that's what this book is trying to say. But this moment, I got a little bit hung up on it for a second. So unlike them, Nyx is, however, worthy of much punishment. And when she touches the water, she begins to blister and smoke. She tries to get to them as they float away, and her body turns into a wizened husk, and she evaporates into the shadows. That wizened husk was a great phrase there. They wonder what will happen to her. They know she's not dead, like she's a god. She's just, you know, gone away. And then they notice that the Cocoa Puffs have been following all along up on the ledge and crying out to them, which is so sad. They're like yelping and crying. And Nico asks Bob to stop the boat. And when the Cocoa Puffs catch up to them, they throw themselves on board. What in the world, Maggie? I don't know if you heard that. She's scratching at the door. Yeah.
I did. She's your Cocoa Puff.
Oh, that's so cute. Nico set the Cocoa Puffs free, but they have chosen to come back with him. Will tells Nico, he's like, well, whatever happens with this, just know I do accept this. Like, it might be a little strange for us to have these following you around at camp, but I do accept this. And they're not sure if the Cocoa Puffs are coming just to follow Nico, or if, like, this is their way out of Tartarus so they can live in the world, get jobs, do whatever they want to do.
Pay taxes. Life.
But, yeah, pay taxes. Things feel peaceful now, though, despite floating through Tartarus, and they all decide to curl up and take a nap. And then we get a Will perspective on all of this. Nico's fallen asleep. Bob is weeping about being free. And all the Cocoa Puffs are staring at Will. Nico does wake up for a bit and tells Will he needs to rest. That he doesn't need to always be saving the world. And Will then apologizes for how he used to approach Nico's darkness. He recognizes that he used to see it as something that needed to be healed or conquered. And he now knows it's more about learning to live with it, not against it. Nico eventually falls back asleep, and Will thinks about how they both have a lot to talk about and process when they get back to the mortal world, but for now, he's gonna rest. And then I loved this part. One of the little Cocoa Puffs, like, curls up against him and cuddles him, which I thought was really cute. And then I actually thought the last bit of this chapter was nice, so I was gonna read it. I thought this would be a great ending, to be honest. Like, they're really strong lines. It says, Will had heard love described in so many dramatic, bizarre ways over the years, but no one had described it like this. It's like drifting down a river of pain and knowing you are safe. It's like holding a person in your arms and realizing they are an interlocking piece of a puzzle you hadn't known how to assemble. It's like staring into a dark and treacherous expanse, unsure of what awaits you, but finding comfort in the fact that you won't have to face it alone. It was a son of Apollo falling for a son of Hades. It was this. I really was like, applause, the book should end right there. Like, that was just such a beautiful ending line. I love that line of it was the son of Apollo falling for a son of Hades. I thought that was very cute.
It's very, very cute. Yeah. I did notice something during these chapters is while they were sitting in the boat, basically watching Nyx unable to reach them, Bob explains to Nico and Will that Nyx, the reason she is the way she is that she's the daughter of, like, Gaia and Chaos itself. Mm-hmm. And so I was thinking, like, wow, eldest daughter responsibilities, like, having to, like, you're the daughter of Chaos. That's why she wants everything to have purpose and be orderly. And that doesn't make any sense personally to me, but it also does make a lot of sense.
Everyone in this feels like are a result of their upbringing or their parentage. And then I think like the reason she hates Nico is because he fights back against that, about what he was born into.
Yeah, and also Bob, who just like got this opportunity to change and he took it. And he's and once he, instead of like going back to reverting to what he used to be, once he learned the truth, he embraced this new version of himself. And she just, apparently being the goddess of the literal night is not enough, that she has to be jealous of a 15-year-old.
Yeah. See, this is the type of things when it's like not as on the nose, when it's a little more like you can analyze it. I really enjoy analyzing it. I think that's the thing with this book, is a lot of things are kind of spelled out. So like, I can't be like, oh, wow, Nico's chosen to live with his darkness, not against it, because it says that word for word in the book.
Yeah. When
it, like, it's just there. And I did, from my notes, I feel like I received a lot of really interesting DMs after we put out a question about if people thought this book read younger or like the same as PJO or felt more mature, after a couple episodes ago when we were talking about that. And people were kind of split. I think more people thought it read younger, kind of like us. But I had someone sent a DM about how like the themes feel really mature, but like the writing feels a little more immature, which I agree with. Like, I was like, the themes of this book are really intense. Like that theme of like learning to live with and accept your darkness and trauma, yet it being so on the nose makes it feel less mature.
Yeah, I think that's...
Yeah.
Whereas PJO's themes of like everyone has nuance and the...
Yeah.
The history of your family can make or break you. That's very like... applicable for even younger ages. I mean, Trials of Apollo is also, again, more like about things that are more applicable to children as well, like having that trauma with your parent, which is, and recognizing signs of abuse and having that really fraught relationship, unable to take control of your situation, is like applicable to children as well. This is applicable to children, but it's more
for
once you are older and you have to process the trauma that you've gotten as through your childhood. Yeah. I can imagine that being a much, much more mature theme. So that makes sense.
Yeah. I really think it is like Rick just really thrives with first person.
Mm-hmm.
Like when we're seeing it, like the in PJO, when we're seeing everything through Percy's eyes, like, of course, he's not going to be recognizing all the themes. It's Percy. Like, we are intuiting those themes of the novel and of the lessons he's learning based on his experiences. And same with Apollo. Apollo is a little more like, because the whole purpose of him being put on Earth is to learn a lesson. So it's a little clearer the lessons he's learning. But the first person voice works really well for that. Anyway, I feel like we'll get more into that when we finish the book. We're like halfway through this episode. My other note is that I do really like the Coco. Like, I love the personification of trauma, of seeing it like as something outside of yourself that you need to nurture. And like might be a little weird and creepy looking, but it's not really trying to harm you. It's like just a memory, you know, but it is. Yeah, I like that.
I love the idea of them, too. I like that it's something that never goes away. Like, you can't just wish it away or suddenly be cured by it. It's going to be around, but you can view it as something else. You can view it as something that loves you and is a part of you and made you, and so that takes a lot of healing and therapy, but you know, it's a really
which
cool
is why
concept.
I feel like they choose it's why I feel like they choose to follow Nico, because it isn't something that you can just be like, I'm done with my trauma, see ya. Like, it's something that follows, but what shifted is Nico's relationship to his trauma. Like, before he was seeing it as this awful thing attached to him, he was seeing it as something he had to fight all the time, and now he's like, you know what? I don't want you to have control over me anymore. Which, you know, easier said than done. I feel like for people with, like, actually with PTSD, that's not something they can just choose to leave behind. But I get the message. Like, the change in the mindset.
I do like the ideas of the Cocoa Puffs. I just don't love that they're called
the name.
Cocoa Puffs. Yeah. I mean, it is something that you would do when you were 15. I'll give up that. Maybe not 15. Maybe mm-hmm. a little bit younger, but yeah. You know, yeah. It's fine.
Sure.
You're like, I've named my child Cocoa Puff already.
I'm like, I actually have a new dog named Cocoa Puff right now. That would be a good dog name.
That's a good dog name. Yeah. Anyway. All right. So I have chapters 48 through 51. I'm going to finish up the book. So Nico dreams he's hearing his name called. He's in the Lotus Hotel again, and Bianca's there. He cannot believe the audacity of Nyx, who's still trying to haunt him. And he's like, literally turns into his dream self and says, I'm done. Like, let me rest. Enough is enough. But Bianca is actually a ghost. She's there with him. And it's not actually really a dream at all, but a way for the two of them to catch up. There in the room with them is also their mother. Nico hasn't seen her since she's passed. Anytime he does see her, it's in nightmares of horrible things happening. So to have her present and there and not evil or crying or dying is really, really special. She's really happy to see him and she's so proud of him. And they explain that the rules have been bent so that they can spend this time with him. Because they are in Elysium. They did get that granted. You know, they know the right people. But Nico is super confused by this. He's like the dumbest boy alive. And so he doesn't understand who would do this. Who would do this for him? And how could this have went and set up for him? And then he remembers that he has a father named Hades. And
who's a god.
Who's a god of literally the underworld and death. And so mm-hmm. Hades ends up joining them. And Nico's overwhelmed by his emotions. He gives Hades a hug. And he's like profusely thanking him for his amazing gift of basically giving him a round table family time. He also is surprised to learn that Hades knew this entire time Nico was going to trespass into the underworld and then go to Tartarus. In fact, Hades tells him that he's actually the one who sent them the quest. He said that Bob was getting too loud and he knew that the best person to be able to save his friend was Nico. And this is a good point where Nico is like, hey, that's really good. I really feel like loved by the fact that you noticed me and accepted the fact that you thought this quest was a good fit. But at the same time, kind of fucked up that you sent me back to the place of my trauma. And his mom is also like glaring at Hades in this moment. Hades explains that the gods are more calculating than feeling. And so this was a calculated move. And he is understanding. He's also learning and growing. He's understanding that when gods play these games and they use calculations rather than putting sympathy or empathy into a situation, it's the mortals that end up paying the price. But he thinks that this is changing things to gods. Demigods like Percy Jackson and Nico. Clearly not, because Hades let his son and his boyfriend go to Tartarus instead of just going and plucking Bob out. Like, this is, I don't know, this is something in between the gods. Like, Hades could have been like, that is disrespectful. You stole my employee and like take him back. But okay, whatever. Everyone spends some time together. They're saying affirmations. They're building Nico back up. Nico is feeling so loved and so held in this moment, which is complete opposite feelings he's felt basically his whole life, but more recently in the last couple of weeks where he's just been haunted by nightmares. He realizes that it's finally time to let his mom and sister go. He's gotten this time with them. He understands that they are dead and he needs to move on and try to live a happy, healthy future. And Hades also tells him that he doesn't want him to follow that long line of the children of Hades who struggle to find happiness. They're so plagued by their own doom that they don't even seek out to be happy. Hades offers Nico a request, since clearly Hades is in a loving and giving mood. And Nico actually asks him to use that request to set free the mania Amphithemis. If we remember, he was the Minotaur-ish guy who was searching for Dionysus to protect, and Hera had sent him to basically killed him without finishing his task. So now he's just wandering Tartarus forever. This makes Hades even more proud that Nico would use his one request to be utterly selfless, which is really funny because Nico's love language is clearly acts of service. So of course he would do this.
Yeah.
Nico wakes up and he sees Bob is steering them in an unknown direction. Nico tells him actually Hades was the one who sent him to help Bob. And Bob tells him that there's a secret pathway that he will take them on. He is a Titan. He's been alive for a long, long time. He knows his way around the underworld. So he tells Nico to rest and not to worry that Bob was going to take them home, which I was like, low-key feels like Rick was like, I don't want to explain how they get out. It's too much work to describe the different terrains and the pathways. So Nico's just going to go take a nap.
Honestly, respect that choice, Rick. I'm like, yeah, we don't care.
No. Nico wakes up in the open water and he sees Long Island in the distance. They are in the Long Island Sound. Bob is obviously emotional. This is the first time in forever he's seen the sky. If you remember him telling Percy and Annabeth to tell the stars, he says hello. And now he can do it himself, even though it's daytime. But, you know, he can wait till night and he can say hello to the stars.
He's going to become such a stargazer.
Ah, good for him. It's what he deserves.
So cute. Yeah.
As they get closer to camp, they see that Chiron is waiting for them on the shore. Nico jumps out and gives Chiron a hug, which surprises them both. Nico's really openly affectionate since he's, like, let his demons go and they've come back to him. Mm-hmm. He's also a father, so he needs to learn how to, like, you know, show emotion a little more. Chiron is overjoyed to see his campers alive. He was low-key like, God, there goes the last of them. You know, I gotta send him to Tartarus. He's also very curious about Nico's children. He thinks this is a very fascinating development. He's also in Bob.
Sorry. What?
I meant to say he's in awe of Bob, and I said he's in Bob of awe. Oof, I'm sorry. I'll say that. Take two. He's in awe of Bob, who he comes over and is towering over them all because he's in his full Titan size. And a Titanic camp is something that Chiron thought he would never see, which I was like, your daddy's a Titan. He tried to come to camp. But he was in the body of Luke, I guess. So Krook.
Yeah, it wasn't really in a friendly way. Yeah, he wasn't just popping in.
I guess he means it in like a friendly terms, like a Titan being friendly and like welcomed onto the shores of Camp Half-Blood instead of like trying to kill the children within.
Yeah.
Bob explains that he has to go his own way now. He has now suddenly, for the first time in his life, the freedom to choose to be and do whatever he wants. So he's going to figure it out, which I think you are right. He's totally going to be an astronomer. He thanks Will and Nico for saving him, and he heads on his way. Chiron sends Nico and Will to eat and rest, and he also tells them that they have to go check in with Dionysus, who's been eagerly waiting for their return because he wants to know the tea. So Mr. D is also openly affectionate to the two campers. He's like, my favorite campers are back. And I was like, don't you have children at this camp? That's such a diss.
Didn't one of them die? One of them died, right?
Many of them have died.
But he has another one.
He has like one left.
Didn't he have twins and one of them died? Yeah.
Yes. I think the twins, one of them died in PJO and another one died in Trials of Apollo.
Oh, they both died?
No, not the twins. I think just children. He has a couple children at camp, I think. Mm. I know one of his children dies during Trials of Apollo. And I know one of them dies at PJO. have actively died. Nico and Will take turns telling Mr. D all about their adventures and about the Kako demons. Mr. D is thrilled about them. He thinks it makes a great story. He thinks it's chaotic. He loves the vibe that these demons bring to the function. While Will tells him more about the underworld, Nico excuses himself to make an iris call. He calls Piper, who is enjoying the morning sun with her girlfriend, Shell. Nico immediately starts crying as soon as he sees her. Aww. And the two of them have this really, I think, I couldn't decide if I liked it. I liked it because it allowed Piper to have more depth and be someone who is in Nico's life. The content of it, which I again felt like it like was hitting the hammer on the head, where they're reiterating a lot of the things that could have been between the lines and interpreted. But I also, I mean, I think in this situation, in if he's going to make Piper more multifaceted, this is how he was going to do it, is by giving her a little bit of a center stage. And so they,
yeah,
they basically talk about their grief of Jason and their acceptance of themselves and how they can hold space for both happiness and sadness at the same time. Piper tells him that her father is coming to terms with her coming to terms with her sexuality. He's like wanting her to label it. She's finding it really difficult to, and she's realizing that she doesn't have to label her sexuality, and that Shell has been great in every way, especially in letting her have that grief over Jason and not being weird about it, allowing her that space to hold love for Jason without being competitive or jealous or anything like that, which has allowed Piper to heal. It's very healthy. And after this like amazing and cathartic call, Nico falls asleep. A lot of it was Nico wanted to avoided talking to Piper since Jason died, and he felt like he owed a conversation to her. And in that conversation, he realized how much he needed it too, as much as she did. And so it was great. It's like the last bit of thing of the weight that was on Nico's shoulders. So Nico wakes up in a panic, not having meant to sleep, like, and he had told Will he was going to meet up with him. He's wondering if Will is worrying. And previously in the beginning of this book, Will, he would have been really insecure that Will would have been wondering who he was, and probably Will would have thought that Nico stood him up or been assuming that Nico just like ran away and is back in the underworld being moody. But so Nico runs to Will's cabin, and instead he sees him on a call with his siblings Kayla and Austin. They say hi to Nico and they wrap up their call, and Will is very cool. He's like assumed that Nico just fell asleep. He's very understanding. He's very laid back and more comfortable in their relationship. Will tells Nico that after some reflection, he wants to make sure that Will wants to have a relationship with the real multifaceted Nico, not the Nico that Will had made assumptions about and created in his head when he calls him his little ball of darkness. Putting that label on Nico and not like letting Nico be anything else. And Nico also takes ownership of this, of saying that he did also do that to himself. Like, he dressed for the part. He played the part really well. He understands why Will would have these assumptions, but he's really glad that they talked more than they have in their whole relationship over the course of this quest and really found great communication and really built like built a solid foundation for their relationship that they didn't have before. All it needed was a trip to Tartarus, apparently. They've both found a place where they can embrace like the light and the dark of each other without removing the other part, like holding space for both again, that theme of, you know, both things can be true at once. Nico and Will lay on the bed as each Cocoa Puff comes and cuddles with them. And he thinks about how even a year ago, he could not have imagined a scenario close to this. He could not have imagined having a boyfriend, let alone being okay with his sexuality, having his literal demon children cuddling them in bed and everyone being okay with it. And Nico being happy and feeling loved and safe, having a good relationship with his father, letting his mother and sister go. All of these things would not have been possible. And so as this book closes, Nico is hopeful about his future.
Aww. It's a sweet ending.
I liked that ending.
Sweet scene at the end. Yeah.
I think both characters got really good wrap-ups. Like, they're each of their end chapters.
I think so, too. Yeah.
Well done. Mm-hmm. They, like, wrapped up the... They concluded well. They wrapped it up. They are in a good place, which is nice because sometimes... I don't know. The last three series have ended with a prophecy. Of another book, and you're like, oh my god.
Like, this is clearly meant to be kind of a standalone. Not really, because you have to have read the other ones to read this. And like, I know some people don't read the other ones to read this, but I'm like, you're gonna have a shock about Jason again. But I think, like, clearly this isn't gonna be a series, which I appreciate. Like, I like when there's a solid, clear ending to it.
And also, it's not having to, like, set up for that next one, which all of the others have to do, where they have to, like, another prophecy for the next group, which is always involving Percy or Nico for some reason, and yeah. No one gets to rest.
And this time there's seven of them. You're like, oh no. So yeah, I appreciate it. I feel like we've definitely like talked a lot about our overall thoughts, because yeah. I have that next on our list. But I think like my thesis statement on this book is I think the character development is good. I love Nico and Will. I think that the overarching message is really great and really cool that there's a book where the two main characters are two gay characters that is like front line of the middle grade sales section is so cool. Really great. And I like the messages. And on the other hand, I think some of the plot points are very confusing. And I think that it feels a little on the nose with some things in a way that to me feels disrespectful to younger readers and the assumption that they like can't come to that conclusion on their own. Mm-hmm. Though I know that just might be a writing style thing, and that just might be like my own preference with reading middle grade books as an adult. So yeah.
Yeah, I think I echo those statements. I don't think I have any original thoughts. I also think that Nyx was lame. That was like a big thing for me. That was really problematic. I think he could have driven. I know that she was not the most important thing in the book, but to have an overarching villain who's like haunting their dreams end up being like having such a lame motivation still irks me. Like takes me out of the belief of this entire book. And the belief that Tartarus was scary and creepy and all these things. Whereas like with Percy and Annabeth, it was so intense every moment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Not my favorite. I wish he had done better with the villain. But everything else, I completely agree with you too.
Yeah. No, I think adding like the part where I'm like some of the plot points were a little wonky. I think like mostly the plot points surrounding Nyx felt a little like, okay, she's not scaring me. Her house is made of bugs. But that's also us just making fun of her for like 30 minutes straight each week. So
no, that's true. We take our villains very seriously.
We do, because sometimes they're the most fun part of the book, or if they're not fun villains, they're interesting. Like, there's a lot to dive into there, and a lot to analyze, like, what they represent and what their motivation is and stuff, so.
And if you're going to have beef with children as a grown adult, you have to at least have something. You have to have pizzazz, a good motive. Something has to be there. Something has to exist for us to believe that you're just not, like, lame.
Yeah. Oh, it just, I think because we brought up Gregor the Overlander earlier on, I'm like, the way that I would love to spend like 40 hours analyzing the like overarching villain and villains in that book and how that was set up, like, oh.
If you and I ever were to leave the PJ universe, we would have to dive into those books, I think.
Yeah, we'd have two listeners each episode.
But our episodes. Our episodes would be 4 hours long.
We'd be talking about like what the mice represent.
About war and just it would be good. It would be, I mean, that's exactly what we did for PJO though. Like we dove into those.
Exactly. Yeah, because there's some really intense themes. And not that there's not in this book, but they're all there. They're written in the text. There's not too much to dive deep into.
No. We've been told what to think, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, I do have an audio message. I finally listened to a bunch of them that I think kind of segues into our conversation about the villains and the portrayal of this book. So I'm going to play this one for you.
Hi, ladies. My name is Kai. I'm usually talking on Instagram, but I figured I'd send a message this time. This is for post Sun, the Sun and Star discussions, if you want. So my question is, since this is the first co-written book within the PJO bookverse, I was wondering your thoughts on what you think is Rick's influence versus Mark's influence. Because personally, I think that, for example, Nyx is Rick's antagonist for the book, And Tartarus is Mark's antagonist for the book. And obviously, and I've read some of Mark's books, so I'm more familiar with his style than someone who might not have read it. I'm not sure if you ladies have read it, but I was just wondering your thoughts on that. Love the show. Love listening to you. Can't wait to hear more. Thanks.
Ooh, that's a good question, Kai. I really like right? that one.
I feel like I'm going to have to think about it too, but yeah.
I think that, and I was thinking about this in the sense of the writing style, because after, mm-hmm. like, when I was reading this book, I was kind of assuming the tell, not show, was Mark. But the more I'm digesting it, I'm thinking that maybe it was like Mark was like, these are the themes that we have to cover and I think are important. Mm-hmm. And Rick mm-hmm. was like, this is how we'll explain them to the children.
Yeah.
Is my guess. Well, 'cause
there's often... Yeah, I feel like people often assume that kids can't digest like intense conversations about race or sexuality or class or identity, even though kids, like, people start understanding differences when they're babies, like implicitly, like you start consuming things in the world and taking in messages. But I feel like that's a whole other topic that's not being asked in the question. But I really like specifically the mention of like the villains, because I totally like, Nyx is very much Rick's, like, just he loves a disaster villain, and I like the take that Tartarus is Mark's, and I feel like almost like Nico's own emotions are also Mark's. Yeah, I think that it feels like there are two not necessarily conflicting, but there's the villain of Nyx, and then there's the villain of Nico's own thoughts about himself and about how he's being perceived. And when he conquers both Nyx, he's also conquering his own thoughts as well.
I wonder if the relationship that Nico has with his family and with Will and those insecurities are more Rick, because Rick does do a good job in mm-hmm. like familial spaces and yeah. having complicated mm-hmm. relationships. I just like, I know that the preachiness and like, it's okay to be gay, is Rick's, because after Trials of Apollo being like, yeah, I'm gay, yeah. what's your problem with it, is like a little bit much. But I think that Tartarus being the main villain is such a powerful tool, and that's why Nyx looks so lame in comparison. I think it could have just been mm-hmm. Tartarus. Like, Tartarus itself is holding Bob, and they have to like figure out what's going, or something else was holding him back. Just like an idea, or like he's stuck somewhere and he's asking for help rather than
he just like got stuck in the swamp.
Yeah,
can't get out. It's like quicksand.
Or he is being given this opportunity to resurrect, but Tartarus is kind of holding him back. Or he's trying to choose which version of himself to come back to, and he's conflicted. And so Nico and Will come down to make sure that Bob comes back, and he gets to choose who he wants to be. Would have made more sense than this, like, lady in galaxy leggings, like, running around in the background with her bug house.
Bug house in House of Hades. I mean, there was a lot going on in that book and a lot of villains, like Gaia was a whole thing, but in the Percy and Annabeth narrative in House of Hades, like, Tartarus itself is the villain for them, and Nyx is one of the many sub villains they meet down there, like Nyx, and they meet Eclis, and they meet I don't even remember a lot of like the littler monsters, and so I think it's hard to see Nyx set up as the main villain when we know that Tartarus itself is way scarier than Nyx.
I also wonder how much is like publisher and editors who are like, hey, or Disney who are like, hey, we have to push this for the children to be able to consume it. And, you know, so they're trying to make sure that it works in making sure they're not disrespectful and like being a little too careful.
I would believe that, because I've heard really good things about Mark's other books as well. Like, I would be interested in like renting them from the library or something. I should probably do that, because I've heard good things just about like his other middle grade books. Yeah, but I like that question. I feel like I need to read Mark's books to know, to fully be able to pick out what's different. But
yeah,
I would totally believe, like, this does feel like it has a different flavor than Rick's typical books, and that there's a lot more, like, delving into Nico's trauma and his emotions than typically would be. Or normally in Rick's writing, that's done, like, via a one-on-one conversation while the third person is taking a nap and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And so to have a lot that's, like, just thoughts, my guess is that's probably Mark's influence, but I don't know.
All right. Stop, make this too long. Why don't we run into the lightning bolt round questions?
Yes. Sounds good. And I'm just going to count the audio message as the first one because it kind of segues from our overall thoughts into a lightning bolt question. So let's do this first one. Was emailed to us by Nora from Tennessee. Do you think that Will and Nico should have brought someone else on their quest, like a third person, how they typically do? And I'm going to add on to that, if so, who should they have brought?
No. I think that would have taken away from their skills and their emotions, and also that person would be third wheeling so hard while, like, you know, when you're with a couple and they're fighting and you have to just be there, that's awful. I would not wish that on anyone. But I also think that just the two of them needing to rely on just each other really strengthened their mm-hmm. relationship and forced them to have good communication that they probably wouldn't have had. And if you had a third, it would be like a Leo, Piper, and Jason situation where, like, Jason and Leo had more chemistry than Jason and Piper, because Jason is, like, able to, like, be emotionally vulnerable with Leo in a way he can't be with Piper. And that would have been the case where Nico mm-hmm. is being more emotionally vulnerable with X character, or Will is being, like, they're dumping whatever issues that they should be having with each other, like, talking with each other on this third character, while someone else is passed out or missing, because, you know, they can't all be together at the same time.
Yeah, that's
good.
What
do you think?
Yeah, I think, like, for the purpose of this book, probably no. Mm-hmm. But, like, I like, you know, for the purpose of always having three on a quest, and also if I was going to Tartarus, I'd be like, the more the merrier. I don't like power in the people. And so mm-hmm. the third person I think that would be fun to see with them, that I would read a book of, would be Rachel, even though she's not a demigod and she would definitely have a terrible time in Tartarus.
Oh my God.
I just think that would be, I think the three of them, like, have a really fun dynamic that we got to see a little bit of in the last Trials of Apollo book. And I would like to see them on their little shenanigans.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, throw the mortal in Tartarus.
give her a hairbrush.
Mm-hmm. She could do it. She could take them.
All right. So the next question is from Scout. It's, what would you call the cacao demons?
I think that Scout said in the email that they would call them the soot sprites, kind of like in Spirited Away. And I was like, that's perfect. That's honestly what I think of, but I'm trying to think of what else I would call the little Cocoa Puffs. I feel like, well, they're not fuzzy balls. In my head, they're little, like, soot sprite fuzzy balls, but they're
big
not.
Eyes. No.
Like, I want to call them little puff balls or fuzz balls, but that's, like, I guess what they're not actually shaped like.
I don't know.
I think I'd call them, like, my little guys. Ooh, okay, so thinking of what I call my dogs, because they're kind of like little demons, I call them my little chicken nuggets a lot.
Oh, that's so
cute. That's probably what I would call, right? Little chickens or chicken nuggets. That's probably what I'd call them.
My little monsters. Yeah.
Yeah. Aww. That's cute.
Yeah. I feel like Cocoa Puffs, unfortunately, is a really good answer, even though I was really mad about it.
It is.
Now that I'm looking at it, I'm like, fine. I'll think about another chocolate.
You come
name.
To love it.
These are my Reese's Peanut Butter Puffs.
Oh, that's kind of cute.
Such a long ass name.
Yeah. You stumble over it every time. My little Twix bars. Kit Kats.
Kit Kats. That's so cute.
It's kind of cute, especially if one kind of looked like a cat.
Yeah.
So before we do our little outro, we have one audio message I wanted to play that was really nice. And then another little shout out. So I'm going to play the audio message first. This is from Stella.
Hi, Camp Half Pod. I'm Stella, daughter of Poseidon, proud cabin three over here. I started reading the books when I was like 10, and I read the first two. I'm 16 now, and I just stopped reading after I read the first two when I was like 10. But then once the show came out in December, I became obsessed and had to read all of them. And I just finished Blood of Olympus, and I'm so excited to jump into Trials of Apollo and hear all of your thoughts about that and all of Manas's first read reactions, because it's my first read as well. And I don't really have a lot of friends that like Percy Jackson, and I always feel annoying when I talk about it to them because they just don't get it. But you guys really get it. The girls that get it. The girls that don't, and you guys definitely do. So I feel like you guys are like my friends, kind of. It might sound weird, but I feel like I just like laugh out loud and smile when I listen to your podcast, and you guys really help me de-stress and relax, especially when I'm listening at work or school. And I love hearing all of your thoughts and analysis on the books, and of course, all the little inside jokes on the pod. Thank you for all of you, all that you do for us, and I love you guys.
We are friends. That was adorable. Thank you, Stella.
Right? I do. I'm like, I genuinely feel like you guys are my Cocoa Puffs.
They're your trauma?
Demons. No, never mind. Everyone's like my little guys, you know?
They're my little guys.
But I loved that.
That was very sweet.
I thought that was a really nice message. And it's fun because it sounds like this message recently came in like 4 days ago. So Stella is probably listening to Trials of Apollo. So whenever you get to this, Stella, you made it. You made it. And I know. And then we have another shout out. This is from an email. We have a lot of emails that we need to, that Monica needs to respond to.
I'll do it. I've read all of them. I just have to like respond to them. I know.
They're so nice. But we wanted to give one of our listeners' parents sent, the listener is emailed with us, but their parent also sent us an email asking to give them a surprise shout out because it is their birthday next Monday, not this day that this is releasing. Unfortunately, we're finished the book, so we'll be off on their actual birthday. So we are going to wish Micah a happy birthday for the 27th of May. We're wishing you it early so you get a whole week. This is your first birthday gift of a hopefully very fun week leading up to your birthday. So thanks for listening, Micah, and happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Micah. On that note, we are taking a little bit of a break. We're going to take a week off and we're going to have a bonus episode. What that entails, we will let you know. I have to work out some things, but we are excited to be back really quick. And then we're going to take another break and then we're going to start Chalice of the Gods. So I'm really excited. Yeah. I haven't opened that book yet. We will see if we're going to do another read along or if it's going to be a read first and then talk about after that. I kind of want to ask, so maybe we'll put a poll and see. Erin, have you read Chalice of the Gods yet?
No, I'm hoping to just like sit down and read all of it before doing the episodes. And so that might be, maybe we can both read it and then kind of see if we'd rather do a chapter by chapter, if we'd rather do like one or two longer episodes about it. Cause I know it's a pretty short book, or at least the physical copy looks short.
Yeah. And I also wanted to see, definitely. Like, do people like it? When, you know, I guess it's only me. You've always read the book beforehand. Stumble and bumble through not knowing the plot. Or is it kind of annoying because I can't make, you know, overarching analysis with you? So
yeah,
I'd like to know so that I can, you know, decide how I'm going to do it. If I'm going to read it while we do the episodes or read it before. So we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll put out some asks. That'll probably be 50-50.
And then we'll just decide ourselves. Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, and then we'll just go with the vibe. But
I guess it's good. Anyways, we know that nobody has like a strong opinion, so.
Yeah, exactly. We're not doing anything wrong. Or we're doing everything wrong. Something's wrong either way. It's okay. But yeah, we'll have next week off and then we will be back in some form with a bonus and stuff. But anyways, thanks for joining us along for our first, I guess, like standalone book, sort of. It's not a series. And if you are interested in supporting us, the links to our Patreon, Ko-Fi, and our merch are all in our episode description.
And if you are interested in getting your voice on the podcast, you can send us an audio message. It's also going to be in the episode description. You heard a couple of your peers send us some, and so we'd love to hear more of your voices.
Indeed. Helps us so we don't have to come up with lightning bolt questions too. So it's fantastic. Win-win. And then you can find us on social media at Camp Half Pod. Email us camphalfpod@gmail.com. And then we also have a Discord that you can message or email us to join.
If you haven't already and you made it to episode 137, please rate and review. Ooh. You clearly love us, so you're here for the long haul.
Yeah, that's true. Being held captive. Anyway, thanks for finishing another book with us, y'all.
All right, bye-bye.
What is that noise?
Okay, you've heard it too.
Is it Mike? Mike? Are you making noise? Are you like singing or something? Okay, well, I keep hearing something weird. No, don't let them in here.
Would you like me to sing?
No, no, thank you. No, we don't need Apollo here.
Sure.
No. Oh, God.
Combat ukulele out.
Happy birthday.